Light in this present darkness. This is Abounding Grace. Stumbling about in the darkness? Join us now for a time of light in the Word with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Well, we are very grateful that you've tuned in today to another edition of Abounding Grace Radio. And if you've been with us the past few weeks, you know we've been studying John's Gospel, particularly this very powerful chapter, chapter 6. And here Jesus has fed the multitudes, fed the 5,000. He has given them bread, and they have missed. They have missed the whole purpose for which he has come. And that's what I want to study with you this week on Abounding Grace. I've entitled the message here, The Irresistible Christ. What is contrasted here are really two things. If I were to break it down in John chapter 6, it is man's failed desires in Christ's satisfying success. This is the what we come to in John chapter 6 this morning is the heart and the pulse of the Bible with regard to salvation. There is something said in verse 36 that really is one of the most distressing verses in the entire gospel itself. And as I read this, I want you to ask the question, as I read this over the air to you, I want you to ask the question, who is this addressing? Is he addressing pagans? Is he addressing sheer unbelievers? Are they just the, quote, sad scum of society who don't believe? Who are they? Who are they? Well, listen carefully to verse 36. Let me start verse 35. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. But I said to you that you have seen me, and yet do not believe. I want you to keep in mind that by the time this is over, this is what is said. From that time, many of his disciples went back and followed him no more. Who? Many of his own disciples. These are followers of Jesus. And so when he says in verse 36, I have said to you that you've seen me and yet you do not believe, we're not really looking at the masses of the world who have not heard. We're looking at those who have followed Jesus. We're seeing those who are his own disciples who've made an outward commitment in some degree to Jesus. You see, this gospel is about belief. Remember the purpose of John's gospel. These things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and believing that you may have life in his name. That's what this gospel is about. And here, something is wrong with their belief. Looking at this from an earthly perspective, what a failure. All these people are following Jesus, and they've missed him. And it ends with Christ saying, you don't believe me. How will they be saved if these followers of Jesus don't believe in him? This is one of the most difficult realities in the church, you know? I have to say, I have been here in the Linden United Reformed Church for 6 years, and it has been amazing to me how many people have been in and out of here in 6 years. I could fill up the building twice over. And I've heard comments all the way from, this is heaven. We've never heard anything like this. We've had people come and go, and the painful reality that I have witnessed in many who have come and gone is that they just are unwilling to make a commitment to Jesus Christ. They don't make any commitment to any particular church. They love what they hear, but they are exactly, and they don't realize this, which is so tragic, they are exactly the kind of people who are described here in John 6, unwilling to really come to Christ, unwilling to really take up their cross and follow, unwilling to really make the commitment. It's been hard to see, you know? Always people on the peripheral, never making the commitment, but they follow. And I've often said, it is just unthinkable, dear radio listener, to say that you love Christ and yet refuse to join outwardly the body that he died for. Refuse to be a living, active member of that particular body locally manifested in his church. This is the painful reality shown to us in John 6. And I want us to see this. There are really are a few sections here. I'm breaking it down this week for you so that you see that what I just described, that phenomenon of people unwilling to commit, unwilling to follow, who give an intellectual agreement, this very reality is the very thing that Jesus faced here in throughout his entire ministry, and particularly highlighted here in John 6. All these followers, so many unwilling to come, so many unwilling to really follow, so many unbelieving followers. What a strange phenomenon. What you essentially have here are two sections beginning at verse 30. The first section sort of gives us an earthly explanation of why people don't come. And if it were left there, the only conclusion would be that the ministry of the gospel is just a mass failure. Why? Because so many were following Jesus and they weren't believing. But in verses 37 through 40, Jesus explains that his coming will be a success. It will have a saving effect upon those who are given to him. So he's not frustrated by the so many who will not come, who will not believe. And he explains that for us in John 6, that we, the followers of Jesus Christ, would ask the all-important, the all-crucial question that the entire Bible is pressing us to ask, have we come? Dear listener, have you come to Jesus Christ? What does that look like? What is true faith? How do I know that I've come? That's what John 6 is all about. And that we would see just what saving faith in Jesus Christ looks like, because that's exactly what Jesus is opening up and explaining before us in this text. So as I see it, two sections are here. Man's failed desires, Christ's satisfying success. Let's look at this week. Now remember the scene. Jesus had revealed himself as the I Am. He had come to his own. I remember he had crossed the Red Sea here. Well, not really the Red Sea, but he walks on the sea, which is all reminiscent of him leading his people throughout the Old Testament when he brought Israel across the sea. Here, Christ delivers his own, and he brings them across the sea to announce and declare that the time of the true Exodus, the time of being set free from the bondage to sin has come. Well, now we're back to the multitudes. They're following Jesus because he can fill their bellies and be the king of their desires. We looked at that last week. So they have come back the next day to find Jesus. Remember, he had performed that amazing miracle reminiscent of Exodus in the wilderness by giving bread to 5,000 people with just a few loaves. They've missed what it meant. When they were filled to the full, all they could think about the next day was coming back for another feeding. And it's there that Jesus confronted them about their superficial following. Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you. So Jesus is saying here really clearly, you've missed it. You've missed what the bread meant and why you were filled. You missed what the sign pointed to. And in this context, it's real clear. He's talking about himself. You've missed me. You've missed that this bread, this filling bread that you had that nourished your bodies is me. It points to me and how I satisfy the longing and dead soul of man. They shoot back. Now, this is where it gets really interesting in John 6. What shall we do that we may work the works of God? That's John 6, verse 28. Jesus responds to that. This is the work of God that you believe. Okay, now that becomes the statement that drives what follows in verse 30. It's the issue of belief. And did you notice what he said? Their mentality is, what do we do? And Jesus says real clearly, this is what God must do for you. He must give you the ability to believe. Now, in what follows, he unpacks for us what that belief is, the kind of belief that God gives. And he contrasts that, showing us the awful reality that so many have not really come to him, that they might really live. And in verse 30, they ask him a question that shows how empty they all really are. Therefore, they said to him, "What sign will you perform then that we may see it and believe in you?" Why should we believe in you, Jesus? What makes you so special? You know, Jesus of Nazareth, what work will you do? And then the text really allows us to get into their minds. We see what's really in their minds when they ask this question. Our fathers ate the manna in the desert. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Now, this is an intriguing statement. These are the very people who the day before saw him create out of a few loaves and fish so much bread that 5,000 people were fed with 12 baskets left over. And the next day they're asking again for a sign? What in the world are they thinking about? Wasn't that enough? Well, they've clearly drawn the correlation to Moses. They recognize when Nicodemus said, "No one could do these signs that you do unless God is with him." But what makes you so much better than Moses? How long did Moses give bread in the wilderness? At least they think Moses did, from their perspective. Well, it was 40 years until the day they entered the land. Jesus, you've done it once. What makes you so special? Moses did it every day. He gave them bread every day. He rained it down to our father's tent doors. See how fleshly we are. See how this just attacks everyone on the radio who's saying it's all about being physically blessed. It's all about having health and wealth and declaring it. Just say it and declare your health, you know? We want bread, Jesus. Fill us up again. Give us this day daily bread and we'll follow you. You be good to us like that, we'll follow. I don't know how well we're seeing ourselves in these people. But the fact is that our comfortability with physical bread is tragically more appealing and satisfying to us than what Jesus has to offer. Now, he's going to come back and say, "It's my life. You've missed it. It's me. You must come to me that you might live. I satisfy the longing of the heart." I want us to pause there today. We'll come back to this tomorrow and ask, why really are we committed to Jesus? Why really do we follow this Jesus? On what basis do you follow? Does your life show that you're really not all that committed? You've just made an agreement because Jesus can do a lot of things for you, and yet you have not come to him as the one who can truly satisfy the deep longings of your soul and satisfy for you the wrath of God that is against you because of your sin. Jesus must become your all in all. And so I say, dear radio listener, come to Christ. Oh, come to Christ and live. Abounding Grace Radio is brought to you by United Reformed Church here in Linden. We are a church where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught. As always, we give you an invite to join us for worship 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. on the Lord's Day. Visit us on the web at lindenurc.com. Thanks for tuning in today. May the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ in all of its glory continue to richly bless you.